Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sarah Zorn, the food editor at Northside Media, which produces the annual Taste Talks Festival in both Brooklyn and Chicago each fall. Picking up where the festival left off, the Taste Talks podcast brings innovators from various fields, including music, art, media, design, and tech, together with luminaries from the food and restaurant world to expound on any and all topics related to taste. And on today's very special show, after 3 months of talking about slow fashion versus slow food, technological advancements in restaurant delivery, and major trends in beauty, design, and travel, we are going to bring it all back around to the beginning and actually chat about what you can expect from this year's Taste Talks Festival itself with Northside Media founder Daniel Stedman. But first, I am jazzed to be joined in the studio once again by friend of the show, Nell Casey, the food editor of Gothamist, to talk about the week's breaking culinary news. Hey there, Nell.
Sarah, I love that alliteration. Jazz to be joined. I'm right there with you, girl.
You know, as a writer, I'm sure you appreciate this. So considering the theme of today's Taste Talk show is Taste Talks, I have definitely had my feelers out for tidbits having to do with true food innovation. And boy, were there some doozies out there this week. Now, I don't know about you, but I am so over umami.
Yes.
Now, I'm not talking about the fact of umami or the flavor of umami, mind you, which is awesome and encapsulated in super savory ingredients like mushrooms and tomatoes and aged cheese and rich meats, but I've just grown a bit weary of the press racket that has surrounded it. Umami is the fifth taste, and I am looking at you, umami burger. But according to a new study from Purdue University, there just may be a sixth taste in town, and it might be a tad tougher to put a sexy spin on this one because the supposed sixth taste is, wait for it, fatty, or in scientific terms, oleogustus. Sexy,
I mean,
stuff.
That sounds pretty sexy to me.
So now educate us, if you would, about these newfound fat receptors.
Well, I mean, it's sort of hard to explain. I'm not a food scientist, so I...
You're not.
I don't even play
out
on TV.
Out.
I know.
Should have booked somebody
Something
else.
About triglycerides and fatty acids and the way that our taste buds and our mouth respond to these sorts of flavors. But basically, they scientists sort of did a study where they took the four and now five and now six established flavors that these taste buds are capable of experiencing in separate ways. So sweet, salty, sour, and bitter, if I'm not mistaken, then umami, and then fat. And they asked people to sort of blindly taste these flavors, these sort of nebulous sort of things, and how would they define them and how would they characterize them and are they in fact separate? And they discovered that people were capable of differentiating between something that is a fat taste and something that's an umami taste and something that is a bitter taste.
So it's not actually a good thing as one would expect. It's not like, ooh, yummy, yummy French fries. It's actually a kind of really intensely bitter, but otherwise undefinable
I guess,
flavor.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to define it because we can't use words like bitter because that's another one of them. But you're right. I mean, what they discovered and what they said is that, you know, we don't like bitter foods, and yet we love bitter beer. And that the addition of these sorts of flavors to food stuffs is what makes them interesting and special and something different and unique. So, yeah, I mean, like, eating the fatty flavor apparently tastes awful. But, you know, I think that the exciting part is, okay, well, can we recreate this fat flavor and add it to another food to make that food taste different and more special? And maybe celery will be like a delicious fatty thing now because we can put this fat taste on it.
There's nothing that can save celery, and people have tried, i.e. ants on a log. It's not happening. So Umami Burger should watch its back because there may just be an oleogustus burger coming near you, or fatty burger.
There's
actually, there isn't there a fat burger?
There is a fat burger, but it might be P-H-A-T? Oh, no, I don't know. Maybe not.
I hope it is.
Oh, God. The 90s child in me wants it to be fat P-H-A-T.
So in other wacky food science news, so in the molecular gastronomy realm, the process of spherification, which essentially involves dropping liquids into either a calcium solution or an alginate bath to create...
You're a scientist.
Yes, I know. Well, you know, when I write it down, I'm very impressive. To create tiny little balls reminiscent of caviar. It's been a popular tool of the trade for a while now. But there is a new company attempting to raise funds on Kickstarter for their Imperial Spherificator. Sounds
such
very impressive.
A nerdy name.
Well, it'll essentially enable home cooks to easily transform any food, as long as it's been pureed first, into, well, Dippin' Dots.
Dippin' Dots.
So now, how, pray tell, does the Imperial Spherificator work? And will it eventually find its way onto the world's wedding registries alongside kitchen aids and 12-piece china sets?
I'm going to go...
I got married a long time ago, but if this is the case, I will re-register because
fair
I
enough.
Need one.
The wedding registry thing, I can't speak to that. It is one of those crazy sort of gadgets where, you know, does anyone really need this thing? No, but it's
kind of
fun.
No one needs melon ballers, but they exist.
That's true. And also, like, spiralizers, that's also a thing. So maybe people just like to make their food into different shapes. I don't know. Sounds fun. The science of it is sort of... probably lost on me, but I think it's a cool idea. I mean, things like you mentioned caviar, but like salmon roe and like biting into that and that like explosion of delicious flavor filling your mouth. I mean, the possibilities are kind of endless. I mean, making
now,
can
you say
tea,
that again in a very sexy voice?
Which one? The possibilities are endless.
Bursting
in your mouth.
The salmon balls bursting.
They are. Oh, God. This is taking a turn.
We're allowed to curse on Heritage.
That's
There's
true.
No reason we can't do, you know, sexy
get,
salmon.
Get filthy with it.
Balls segments.
Bursting in your mouth.
All right. Move on.
But I mean, think like, you know, bubble tea and stuff like tapioca already has that sort of quality to it. And like drinking a cocktail and having like a burst of some, I don't know, like, could you make alcohol be these little balls? I mean, that sounds
kind of
fun.
Yes, please. Can you please make alcohol be these balls?
speaking of which, this is the first week that someone hasn't been drinking a Bloody Mary right in my face at Roberta's.
Yes, look at these. They're monks.
Step it up,
water.
Roberta's customers.
Water.
We're eating right now. Step it up.
All right. Well, so the takeaway here is, in the not-so-distant future, we could expect to find our food sprinkled with fat that has possibly been shaped into bouncy little caviar balls.
I'm down with it.
Yum.
Butter balls?
Yum,
bring
yum.
It on.
We are going to take a little break, chew that one over for a bit, and come right back with Northside Media founder Daniel Stedman.
Don't hate it, don't make some noise.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
So, being as the Taste Talks podcast is an audible offshoot of Northside Media's annual Taste Talks festivals, which celebrate innovation and innovators in the food world through panel discussions, dinners, and parties, and those festivals are just over a month away, it seemed high time to bring on Northside Media founder Daniel Stedman to give us the inside scoop on what we can expect. Now, originally, he was supposed to be joined by the incomparable April Bloomfield, who has helped curate curate talent and content for both the inaugural iteration of the festival in Brooklyn in 2013 and this year's Chicago Festival along with Paul Kahn. But thanks to a snafu over at American Airlines or whatever, she is currently flying the friendly skies. So, Daniel, I hope you have boned up on your British accent, because I might just have to ask
April, you
about the Spotted Pig, your newest cookbook, and what it feels like to win a James Beard Award.
Roll mops.
All right, it's cool. We'll just stick with what you know. So, Daniel, in addition to its multiple print publications and online presence, Northside is perhaps best known for the Northside Festival. It's an annual celebration of music and film that has been described as the South by Southwest of the East Coast. And isn't it moving to Amsterdam as well? Big
news. Oh, goodness.
News.
Yes, yes. We are bringing the festival to Europe.
Imagine the Northside crew in Amsterdam. My goodness. North. They're never coming back.
The Brooklyn of Amsterdam.
The Brooklyn of Amsterdam. So the Northside Festival has obviously been growing in scope and popularity each year since 2009. So what made you decide just 2 years ago now to make the foray into food with Taste Talks?
Well, we'd seen these food extravaganzas come and not go. Like, these food extravaganzas came and stayed. And for years, we were like, what's our large-scale food event? And then we had this idea of kind of doing it through the lens of what had been successful at Northside Festival, which is kind of a discovery festival and a showcase festival with a large innovation conference. So we decided really to make Taste Talks primarily a food conference with a couple of large-scale eating events and dinners and parties. And that was really the initial concept, was kind of to take the Northside Festival model and do it like a food festival. Now, of course, even in its first year, it came out quite a bit different than what we do at Northside. But the idea was doing a conference and throwing in some eating and drinking and partying.
That's the way to do it. So you're actually a great person to speak to this phenomenon, because as opposed to dyed-in-the-wool cuckoo crazies like me, and I could only imagine my friend Nell over there, who has been single-handedly obsessing about food since birth, you are just seriously keyed into pop culture in general. So what would you say are the catalysts that helped make food culture a universal obsession on the level of music and art and film?
I mean, I think it's just that we all eat. We eat many times a day, and we all love to eat. And, some people like theater. Some people like to go out to music. Some people like to go to the movies. And everybody seems to love eating and drinking and socializing. And there's also this, I think there's this phenomenon of us, you know, us aging hipsters getting babies and growing up and turning our entertainment our entertainment eyes and time from music and shows and partying or whatever to like just going out and having and enjoying a great meal and socializing and being with friends.
I'm actually interested to hear your take on it now, if you want to try out your best April Bloomfield accent. No, just speak to it as a food writer, because it's this very obsession that has kind of fostered our own careers as food writers. Let us actually do this as a full-time job. Amazing. So we speak of chefs as being the new rock stars. So how do you think it came to be that everyone, no matter their background or their job or their primary interests, reads food blogs, watches cooking shows and competitions, and knows the names of chefs? And Jesus Christ, chronicles every single thing they eat on Instagram.
Well, I mean, social media is a great point to speak to. And I think Daniel really hit the nail on the head when this food is universal. And, you know, we can pinpoint probably a billion different ways how food has evolved. But a lot of it has to do with the internet and sort of the globalization of the world. We can all be clued into what other people are doing and what they're participating in. And food is so universal that we can look at someone halfway across the world and what they're eating and be like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know about that before. You know, living in a city like New York, and we're going to talk about growing food cities later, but New York has such a diverse food scene that people are able to sort of experience a taste of the entire universe in this one city. And social media has become such a huge way to participate in a conversation about food and you know, connect with people you might ordinarily not connect with and not know about, but who share this passion. So I don't know. I agree, though, that I think Dana hit the nail on the head. Just everyone loves food and everyone has to eat and everyone, it's a convivial experience. It's something that we all can relate to and bond over.
Well, since its inception 2 years ago, April Bloomfield, as we mentioned, as well as Danny Bowen, have served as curators for the Brooklyn Taste Talks Festival, and Paul Kahn, along with this year April, are curating Chicago. So, Danny, why did you think those three were especially well-suited to be the face of the future of food?
And we also have Questlove as our...
Well, I know we're going to get to Questlove.
Brooklyn. So... You know, these are just people that I think are, like, in the zeitgeist moment of food. April, obviously, Danny Bone, Paul Kahn, Questlove. They're also people, like, you know, April and Paul particularly are people who are greatly admired by chefs. And that has made them, like, really, really exciting partners. And we have Fergus Henderson coming from London to be part of Taste Talk Chicago. And I just really think that those people are, like, at the very center of this whole new food movement.
So I had separated Questlove, who, yes, is the curator of this year's Brooklyn Festival, which is amazing, because he was an interesting choice and I think really speaks to the fact that food has become a universal phenomenon, because he's not, you know, a food royalty necessarily,
right,
like
he's
April Bloomfield.
Chef.
Yes, he's a musician primarily, and he has an own personal interest in food that he has expressed in all manner of different ways. So considering he so beautifully, you know, treads those two worlds, what are you hoping specifically that he will bring to the table for Taste Talks 2015?
Well, one of the things that's been fun about Taste Talks over the last two to three years is that we've developed this concept of the food mashup. So at our annual All-Star Barbecue, we'll get Maddie Matheson from Toronto grilling with his favorite tattoo artist from the Midwest. And we will pair chefs and food personalities with pop culture stars and non-food personalities. And that's what made Questlove such an amazing partner for the festival. He's really, like, done this food crossover, and he is a food entrepreneur, and he does these incredible food salons. But he's not a chef, and he's not a restaurateur. He's a pop culture star who loves food and has created, you know, his own food platform. So to work with him and bring out incredible chefs and bring out other, like, non-food personalities to collaborate in some of these mashups, and also to get the conference, which of course is all about food at its core, still, like, I love the workshops on food media, on hospitality, on branding and the business of food, and discussions with restaurateurs. So chefs are at, you know, the very core of the concept, and chefs are sort of the rock stars. But there's also, the, you know, all of this cross collaboration that, and I think Questlove is a great sort of the epicenter for that.
So who are some of the innovative, game-changing Taste Talks guests, both past and present, both Brooklyn and Chicago, that you think have really shaped food culture today?
Oh, great question. I don't know whether to apply these to our past participants or just speak about our inspirational food figures. You know,
any and all.
Nathan Myhrvold is someone that we've talked a lot about bringing to Taste Talks. Fingers crossed that will come together. But he's just been, you know, at the center of, you know, molecular food culture and the science of food.
I wish we could have talked to him about the sixth taste. Damn,
he would have had the real science known.
And then we've also done just really, really fun ones like Action Bronson with Chef Michael White. And, you know, Action Bronson was formerly a chef and sings about food. So, you know, they were like a really natural fit.
So can you spill the beans on who is definitely confirmed? I know we're working on it as we speak, but who is confirmed for Taste Talks this year?
There are so many. We'll have close to 100 chefs in both Brooklyn and Chicago.
That's amazing.
Go online and check it out.
Well, I know it from a purely selfish perspective. I have been very excited that Taste Talks has come into fruition. There's very little that I could personally contribute to the Northside Festival, being about music and tech and whatnot. But I love being part of Taste Talks and being able to host panels each year. So I'm one of the breaking topics that I think that is really on everybody's mind is, especially coming from a food media point, where I know that people like Nell and I are kind of pushing these chefs and restaurants, like, tell us why we should write about you. What's your story? What makes you stay in the public consciousness? And it's really the media that lights the fire for everybody to be new, notable, have a story. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about how restaurants stay relevant when they're more than 1 year old. So Dominique Ansel is going to be part of that. Marco Canora, very exciting. Yep. Hopefully that'll play on Heritage. So we're excited to see them. So the Taste Talk's mission statement is to celebrate the future of taste through symposia, panel discussions, dinners, and parties. What does the future of taste mean to you, Daniel Stenman?
Well, I like our tagline, the future of taste, because it lets us go wider than just food. You know, Taste Talks has, you know, culinary culture at its core. But we also, you know, like to play with that. And, you know, we had like Mario Batali talking about the intersection of art and commerce with Wiley Dufresne and Jennifer Rubel and Amir Questlove Thompson at our inaugural festival. So, you know, we're not afraid to kind of take a, you know, a conversation about food, but also sort of apply it to taste in general. Like one of my favorite questions that was ever posed at a Taste Talks event was by Carrie Diamond, who's been part of our festival year after year. And she just asked Mario Batali and Christina Tosi and Danny Bowen, what do you have good taste in? What do you have bad taste in? And, like, fantastic question.
But where, Mario Batali?
I remember, I think it was...
I think that's what he said, though. I mean, I'm not...
Yes, Batali
Mario
said footwear.
Batali.
And was it Tosi? Like, gut instinct, furniture. Great taste in furniture. Who would have known?
Oh,
if I remember
a great
correctly.
Taste in furniture?
That's what I remember.
Maybe she should outfit the Heritage Studio. I love the Heritage Studio. Can it? No, never. Right.
That was just like a great question. What do you have good taste in? Like, what a fascinating, totally, like, nothing to do with food necessarily, right?
It's fun to you, Daniel. What do you have good taste in and bad taste in?
Oh, God. What do I have good taste in? Conceptual art.
Oh, my goodness.
Bad taste? Fashion.
I think you're pretty stylish.
It's all my wife.
Well, then you have good taste in wives. I mean, there you go. Nell, what do you have good? I don't want to ask you because then you're going to ask me, and I really don't want to answer it. All right, Nell, what do you have good taste in and bad taste in?
That's such a hard question.
Go for it.
But it's a good question. Okay. I don't know. It's so subjective. Like, I'm like, oh, I have great taste in music. But then I'm like, oh, I only listen to music from the 70s. Like,
that's good shit.
So maybe I don't.
T-Rex. Great taste in T-Rex over here.
I'm fine with that. Bad taste. Oh, Sarah, you're putting me on the spot right here.
Well, you could just saying.
What do you have good taste in?
No, I knew you were going to send
coming.
It to me.
That's coming. No, Sarah.
You need to buy me some time. I'm mulling over. I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. Think of something.
You've both already thought of it. You're just afraid to say it.
That's maybe true.
I have not a thought in my head.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to straddle the line. I have good taste and bad taste in cheese. Let me explain.
What?
I love cheese, and I will go to Bedford Cheese Shop and eat every single cheese they have there, and then I will go home, and I will eat Kraft macaroni and cheese and squeezy cheese from the ballpark, and I will love it.
High, low,
with
taste
reckless
and cheese.
Abandon.
But I love, okay, so before I knew exactly where you were going with that, all I heard was, I will go to bed for cheese.
That is also accurate.
I heard that also.
You heard that too?
I heard that.
Maybe I said it and didn't even know it. Will whore for good fromage.
Say it in your salmon roe ball voice.
And bad fromage.
Cheese balls. Yeah. Caviar.
Exploding in your mouth.
Okay, so we can move on to the next question. Yes,
oh, dodging it, aren't you? Dodging it.
No, I mean, I think... I feel like just like you have good, bad taste in cheese, I think it would be a cop-out to say I have good taste in food. I'd like to think that I have good taste in food, so that goes without saying. I think I have good taste in accessories, although it doesn't really express itself in any way today, and bad taste in fashion. But the reason that I've honed my taste with accessories is because I know so little about fashion that I try to make a fashion statement just through accessories because I don't know how to put an outfit together.
I buy really, very...
cool, interesting accessories. And if I know somebody who's traveling abroad, I will ask them to bring me back a cool piece. So when somebody says, hey, where'd you get that necklace from? I could say, you know, Israel and not H&M. So
I
this
think
is
every
how
time I've been
I
with
manage.
You and you wear those awesome fork earrings, everyone's like, I love those earrings. Where did you get those earrings?
Okay, so, those are actually from Chelsea Market, so you can go to Chelsea Market and get them. But I do, I collect, you know, utensil jewelry. So I express myself through accessories because otherwise, ugh, I just hang around in the rattiest pajamas, which my husband is probably back in my house throwing away as we speak. I will throw away his collection of comic books in the corner if that happens. All right, so Daniel, obviously, Northside Media in general is all about celebrating Brooklyn culture, and Taste Talks was born of the fact that Brooklyn is an undeniable epicenter of food culture. But you expanded to Chicago last year, and I would imagine hope to continue to grow the brand further and further, maybe as far as Amsterdam, who knows? Although, do they have a food culture there? I mean, everybody's kind of like up for anything, right? Considering Amsterdam's... All right, everybody zoned out over there. Anyway, so what do you think makes Chicago an especially exciting up-and-coming food city? And even just theoretically, no promises needed here, what other U.S. cities do you think would make ideal Taste Talks hosts? And why?
Well, first of all, Chicago, pound for pound, has got to be, like, the best food city in the country.
Wow. I mean, big talk coming from somebody who runs Brooklyn Magazine.
Well, I mean, it's hard to, you know... New York City, it's hard to beat New York City just in its scale and breadth. And New York is a fantastic food town. Brooklyn on its own is an unbelievable food town. I hardly ever cross the river into Manhattan. But Chicago is just like full of great people who, I think it's all about the chefs. And I think like Paul Kahn really like is really what it's all about. They're like people who love their beer. Like I was just there. And I went to two bars and asked for a ghost. I don't even know if I say that right. I think it's called a gose or whatever. A salty coriander yeasty beer.
Oh, we so should have, good. We should have our editorial director, Mike Conklin, call in on this. But, I kind of zone out on beer because he knows
all,
too much.
They all had the beers I wanted. Yeah. And it's like, I'm not even really a beer lover, but I'm a little bit particular about my beer. I like a Kolsch on the right day. I like a Ghost on the right day. And I like a Hefeweizen on the right day.
So you have good taste in beer.
I have a decent taste in beer. I like what I like, you know? I just think Chicago is just a place where people have good taste in food, and the restaurants have come to like, you know, have been able to fulfill that for people. You know, I'm a little inarticulate here.
No, totally. Well, what do you think? Obviously, Amsterdam is a done deal for Northside Festival, but where else could you imagine Taste Talks expanding to?
I mean, you know, we definitely talk about like the small markets, like Nashville and Portland, mm-hmm. and we talk about the glamorous markets like Los Angeles and Miami. You know, I think that they're, you know, we'd love to grow the festival, and hopefully, knock on wood, thump, 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 we'll be able to keep it going.
Well, let's get down to brass tacks. How does one obtain tickets to Taste Talks? What do they cost, and what do they get you?
Well, you can get a you go online www.taste-talks.com and you can buy a conference pass. You can buy the kitchen sink pass to get you into all the conference events and the dinners and the all-star barbecue.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Everybody should sign on right away. It has been such a treat to have you here. April, we missed you. Wish you could have been with us today. And I truly cannot wait for Taste Talks this fall. It's always such a great time. We are going to take a short break and then chat about the up-and-coming food cities and restaurants that should really be on your radar. You're listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
So Taste Talks may have been born in Brooklyn, but its overarching mission is to suss out and celebrate food innovation wherever it occurs. And increasingly, that is happening well outside of New York. Obviously, Chicago has exploded as a real culinary capital in the last few years. So I was hoping we could take a moment to showcase some other burgeoning food hubs and chat about some of the restaurants that have really helped to put them on the map. So guys, what cities would you say are poised to challenge New York City as food capitals of the world, or at least the country? And what are some of the most notable restaurants within them?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's poised to take over New York City anytime soon. However, a friend of mine from Minnesota for like the past year has been going on and on about Minneapolis.
I never expected anybody to say Minnesota. Sorry to interrupt.
I'm here to just blow your mind.
Sell it.
That's my thing. So he has been telling me he's from the area, so obviously a little bit of hometown pride. But, you know, looking into it, there are some really exciting things happening right now. The place that's sort of on the top of the list at the moment is Spoon and Stable, Gavin Kaysen's restaurant. He is a Balud chef.
I know. He left us. Okay. So,
for
yes,
literally
you're right.
Greener pastures
that
in Minnesota.
That is a good example of why Minnesota is on the up and up.
Oh, totally. And, you know, he's a James Beard Award winner, moved to Minnesota, opened this restaurant last year around this time, and has really, you know, brought that sort of like high-minded, I don't want to say high-minded, maybe that's not the right word, but like this really gourmet sort of approach to food, but it's also super approachable and delicious and has become a really big hit in the neighborhood. And apparently, according to my friend, he, quote, poached chefs from other local restaurants to come aboard with his mission. So that's kind of cool.
And also bad for him, however.
You know, what are you going to do? Greener pastures, so to speak. And then you know, Bachelor Farmer, which is same neighborhood in Minneapolis. Sort of, as my friend put it, re-embracing the sort of Nordic and Swedish roots that a lot of Minnesota has to thank. So doing sort of different versions of classic dishes like salmon and dill toasts and like meatballs that are like much different than what you'd expect at like a grandmother's table.
So they actually have a right to like, you know, proclaim themselves as the new next wave of new Nordic cuisine.
I know. How on point, even though they opened in 2011. But yeah, that Nordic thing, they can sort of be a part of that as well. And like you said, it's authentic.
All right. Selling Taste Talks Minnesota.
Hey, man, I'm now it's funny because, you know, Minnesota is also a place that's known for the big state fair where you have like the most ludicrous, over the top sort of like lowbrow awesome food, and then at the same time there's this great, you know, burgeoning food scene in Minneapolis. So I like the juxtaposition of the two put together.
Oh my god, I'm all over it. I've never even considered visiting that state. That was as great a case for Minnesota's food scene as I've ever heard. Well, you know, not quite as much of a game changer as proclaiming Minnesota as the next in a, you know, food hubs. But Philadelphia is quickly becoming known for way, way more than its cheesesteaks. And you have restaurateurs like Mark Vetri and Jose Garces and Eli Culp, who is behind the incredible Fork and High Street on Market, to thank for that. Now, Eli, as some of you may know, was seriously injured in the tragic Amtrak derailment back in May, but that has not curtailed his plans to open a restaurant in New York this fall. So we're thrilled to eventually call him one of our own. But yeah, Philly is super, super exciting. Portland, and I'm not talking Oregon, like Portland, Maine is happening. It's where it's at. They've got 4th Street, of course, which really has, you know, revved them up into high gear, got them a lot of attention. But there's Duck Fat, which is amazing, where just like true to its name, they make every single dish on their menu with copious amounts of duck fat from milkshakes and fries and beignets and sandwiches and salads and yay, duck fat.
That sounds delicious and dangerous.
Yeah, well, you know, they're going to have to find a way to encapsulate that flavor and just sprinkle it atop food. And then my favorite find when I visited Portland recently was the Holy Donut. I don't get wowed by donuts very often, but they make their donuts with potatoes. So like mashed potatoes in the flour, and they're not as heavy as one may think. Daniel seemed to get excited by the mention of Holy Donut. Do you know them?
Anything with potato flour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But they're amazing. And they had, like, I had a Maine, like, the potato donut, and it was filled with wild Maine blueberries, and it was everything. It was delicious.
So Portland.
Portland.
Portland, not Oregon, but Maine. Well, maybe Andy Ricker will open a Pock Pock Portland, Maine. Anyway, that is our show for today. Be sure to visit northsidemediagroup.com, where you could access Brooklyn Magazine and the Elle Magazine and get more info on the various festivals, including Taste Talks, which you can also follow on Twitter at Taste Talks. Nell Casey is on Twitter, too, at Nell Casey, as am I, at Sarah Zorn BK. And you could subscribe to our show feed on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. And until next time, you have been listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.